You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon Halloween edition from the past.
That's going to mean nothing by the time this airs. Nothing.
We're recording this on Halloween. Ooh, spooky. Oh, I should have a more Halloween appropriate name. Excuse me, start over. Hi, I'm Joe Death.
It doesn't even rhyme.
And it works better on paper.
Too bad we are an audio podcast.
Pretend you read my name.
See,
the podcast is all about using your imagination. What did you say?
I said Skeletoni.
That's way better.
Yeah, I know. You came up with it too, though.
Oh, I did?
You did, nice. Like a year ago. That was my Twitter handle last year because you said it and I was like, that's fucking amazing.
When a high five passed me.
Current you, though, really dropping the ball.
Toe grief. Toe grease?
Maybe we should start the podcast.
Yeah, let's do that. Today, we're going to be talking about the third serial of the 24th season of Doctor Who, Delta and the Bannerman, which consists of three episodes that aired from November 2nd, 1987 to November 16th, 1987.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at mattgolden.xyz.
I would just like to mention, right off the bat, I have one cat in my lap purring next to the microphone, and there is a second cat attacking a toy mouse. So that's almost certainly getting picked up on the mic, and I don't know what to do about that.
I don't know either.
We have a second cat.
We have a second cat now. That is news. We always said, because our first cat's name's Midnight, we always said if we got another cat, we were going to name it
Blink.
But this cat had a name, so it's Aspen.
It's Midnight and Aspen, and you'll be able to hear them. We took the bell off of Midnight's collar.
We have not done that with Aspen.
Because Aspen, if Midnight is like hiding somewhere and you come home and she's like in a closet and you're like, Midnight, she'll come out and be like, yes.
Yes.
Aspen will wait until you find her. And so she has the bell still.
So that's news. That's the news for us. There's also, as we previously mentioned, we're recording this on Halloween, which means the new season of Doctor Who has started.
We haven't watched it yet.
We haven't watched it yet. But I assume we'll have a bonus episode up sometime soon about it, probably. Maybe we should wait and do it the whole season since it's one fucking story. I don't know why I'm so angry about that.
I don't either.
I think I'm just angry because it's six episodes in a row all written by Chibnall.
Fair enough.
I'm not looking forward to that uninterrupted Chibnall run. I think there's one episode that he co-wrote, but he wrote all of them. Yay. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that because it's news, but we haven't seen it, so we have nothing to say about it. Maybe we should, what, do you think you're going to like it?
Should I make a prediction?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't think I'll like it.
I think there's going to be interesting stuff that's not going to pay off by the end of the season. I think Chibnall's pretty good at, like, starting
setups.
A thing. Yeah. Remember the Spyfall episode? There was some interesting stuff there, and then it all just kind of went wibbly-wobbly. Timey-wimey.
Midnight, you can't sit in there just to intimidate Aspen. It's not nice.
Both of them slept on top of me this morning.
It's exciting.
It was exciting. It was a Halloween miracle. Then one of them got too close to the other one, and then they hissed and split apart.
This is what keeps happening. Midnight got closer to Aspen and then hissed at Aspen, and it's like, you move closer to her.
You instigated her space, yeah.
And then Aspen hissed back, and Midnight was absolutely shocked that that was an option and left.
If y'all have any cat tips, because they've been together for about a week, maybe?
More than a week.
More than a week? Well, still not very long. And they've gotten better, but...
I mean, we went through the whole process of, like, they each had their own side of the house and all that stuff. But it was also getting to be, like...
We're very impatient.
Well, yeah, but when one of them's, like, pawing at the door and is freaking out because they're, like, locked in a small space, it's hard not to be like, okay, you can have the whole run of the house, but you need to work this shit out between the two of you. Good luck.
Anyway, welcome to our new podcast, Cat Talk. I've been watching these, like, My Cat from Hell episodes on Discovery Plus because my parents have it. And I'm like, well, what can I learn about having two cats? Because this is the first time I've ever had two cats. They're not as bad as the cats in the show. So I'm like, why aren't you better yet?
They're not as bad as the cats from Hell.
Right. And the cats from Hell are fine now. They got over their problem. Like, and they were way worse. There was, like,
in the attacks. Space of an episode, too.
Yeah. Though that was, like, multiple weeks condensed into a 20... Well, actually, it was probably, like, an 11-minute
segment.
We've got to
talk about Doctor Who.
Yeah, let's talk... Well, I mean, we did. Do you want to talk about Delta and the Bannerman?
I would love to talk about Delta and the Bannerman.
All right, let's talk about Delta and the Bannerman. First up, this serial is a play on a music band called Echo and the Bunnymen. How do you feel about that?
I have almost no feelings about it.
Do you think that that's some decent wordplay?
No.
Me either. I think I like Echo and the Bunnymen. They did the killing.
Is it a reference for, like, a reason, though?
I mean, it's rock and roll. There's a lot of music in this episode, right?
Yeah.
They're in the 50s, but, like, Echo and the Bunnymen were primarily 80s. I don't know how that works out. But they did The Killing Moon, which is a good song. I like that. But yeah, that wasn't originally what this episode was going to be called. They just thought of that, like, late. Like, it feels like they were just like, oh, this would be funny because of that thing. And then they changed it. And it's like, it's not that great of a reference. You know what it reminds me of? It's like, it reminds me of, like...
One of your titles?
Harsh. Harsh. And I was going to say it reminds me of Arachnids in the UK, which is like a play on anarchy in the UK. But it was originally, the working title was Flight of the Chimeron. Which title do you prefer? Delta and the Bannerman or Flight of the Chimeron?
I do like Delta and the Bannerman.
Right?
I don't care about the fact that it's a reference to anything. It just feels good.
It sounds cool. I mean, that's probably why Echo and the Bunnymen called themselves Echo and the Bunnymen.
Yeah.
Because it sounds cool.
It sounds good.
It sounds better than Flight of the Chimeron.
Flight of the Chimeron definitely sounds like a piece of classical music.
Chimeron? Yeah, it does. It's hard to say, though, because I can't pronounce that word very well.
Chimeron.
Like, this whole episode, every time they said it, I thought they were saying shimmering, because he says the Chimeron Queen, and I thought he said shimmering.
I mean, it is supposed to be like shimmering, right?
Maybe, I don't know. I never know what they intend with these... weird words. But let's dive into the actual serial itself.
Okay.
Episode 1, which I have called The Doctor Dances. That's a good title. No one's ever thought of that one before, right?
Sure.
Oh man, I should have called the second one the Empty Child or something. The Shimmering Child. I didn't, because I wasn't thinking that clearly. We start off, like, mid-battle. There's a battle happening between the Shimmerins and the Bannermen. You can tell which ones are the Bannermen. Because they have great big banners hanging from their butts. They got these, like, butt flags, right? They should have called this Delta and the Butt Flags. What do you think about that for a title?
Yeah, I like it.
So the Bannermen have, they're all wearing, like, black leather and helmets and goggles. And they have these butt flags.
Why are you calling them butt flags?
They're like flags that stick up out of their butt.
They're not out of their butt.
They're on their back.
On their back? They don't come out of their butt.
They come out
don't
of their
tell
butt.
The people that they come out of their butt.
They're butt flags.
They're
butt banners. Banner butts. And they are led by Gavrok, who is this grimy looking dude who blows a horn all the time. And the Shimmerins are plastic toy soldiers.
They look exactly like toy soldiers. I really thought we were going to be doing, like, this elaborate child's game.
Nope. They just look that way.
They just look that way.
I mean, they don't have the, like, flat base. I'm like, I'm wondering, is that, like, armor or something? Or did they just look that way?
We don't spend enough time with them to really find out, because it's not important.
We also meet Delta, who is also a I mean, are these green guys Shimmerons? Or are they some... Like, she's a shim... I hate saying this damn word. A Shimmerin. Shimmeron.
Shimmeron.
Shiba. She's the Shimmeron Queen.
Yes.
But she doesn't look like that. She just looks like us, like a human.
I think the queens look like that.
I have a question about that. I'll bring it up later. It involves Billy.
Okay.
So anyway, Delta and one of the Shimmeron dudes, one of the green guys, they get onto one of the Bannerman ships.
Wait, are the green ships. Guys Shimmerons?
I thought they were. I could be wrong. Maybe they're just not. I don't know. I just assumed.
You just assumed?
She mentions, like, all of her people are dead except for her. So I figured that was all these green guys. I could be wrong.
I'm looking it up.
Look, I'm just going on the information that the show gave me. Yeah.
Okay.
Shimmerons are...
Are the green guys.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you think about it, remember how the baby starts out?
Green.
So, yeah, they're the same.
Your question, though, was that the person who turns into a Shimmeron later does not look like the green guys.
No, but he does have a slight green tint.
All right. Anyway.
Delta and one of these guys get on one of the Bannerman ships. Gavrok is on the ship already and shoots him. And then the Shimmeron shoots Gavrok back and he falls out of the ship. But he's not dead. Now he's just really angry. She takes off in the Bannerman ship. And as the Shimmeron dies, he gives her a case and says, you know, take it. Don't worry about me. Worry about this thing. Spoilers, this is an egg.
It's a weird-ass egg.
Then we cut to the Doctor and Mel land at a toll stop, and it's very creepy and ominous, and then this great big goofball guy pops out and is like, congratulations, you've won. You're the 10 billionth customer. He's all wearing purple, and he's like, you win a free trip to Disneyland in the 1950s.
Such an amazing premise.
Apparently, this guy's famous for this kind of thing.
For what kind of thing?
Like a presenter type guy.
Oh.
I can't remember his name. I had no idea. I was just like, this is a fun character. But like, that's kind of how he, that shtick that he does is kind of like what he does generally. He's a comedian, singer, and occasional actor. The last great music hall entertainer is how he's been described. Ken Dodd is his name. Sir Kenneth Arthur Dodd.
Ooh.
There's a lot of criticism against this character because of stunt casting. But, like, I don't know who he is, so it's fine with me.
I love when there's criticism due to stunt casting because it has zero effect on me.
Like, that's just a fun character.
None. I'm allowed to just enjoy it as it is.
Like, I don't get the reference. So, but I enjoy it. I think it's a fun character.
I never have to have the knowledge that Ross from Friends just showed up and played a weird character on Doctor Who.
God, wouldn't it be great if just Ross showed up in a future episode of Doctor Who? No. It'd be like, we predicted it. No, I mean, not like Ross the character, Ross the actor.
Whose name is?
David Schwimmer.
I did not know that.
I know that because he's in a lot of other things that are, he's better in. He's in that podcast you like.
Which podcast?
Homecoming.
Oh, he is good in that. I mean,
he's a dick.
I want to murder him, but he's good in it.
He directed that movie with Simon Pegg where he's running.
Simon Pegg where he's running.
Yeah, it's written by Michael Ian Black. Oh, shit, what's it called? It's the movie where he's running. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, and I'm begging you, we've got to start talking about Doctor Who again.
David Schwimmer, Simon Pegg, what's it called?
Are you Googling that and running?
They were in a movie together, and so that's, they were in something called Big Nothing, which I've seen and I don't really remember it. But that's not what I'm thinking of. Running. Run, Fat Boy, Run. That's what it's called.
Oh, I've never seen that because it looked bad.
That's all right. It's written by Michael Ian Black and Simon Pegg. It's got Dylan Moran from Black Books.
I do like him.
Yeah.
We've got to talk about Doctor Who. We've got to.
Okay, so they've won a free trip to Disneyland. Woo!
Such a weird tone from, like, creepy to exciting to creepy again.
There's going to be a point where it's just things happen and characters just accept it. There's a lot of weird shit that happens in this, and no one reacts like a normal human being.
No one questions it. We don't have time to question it. We just have to go.
I mean, initially, this was gonna be a six-parter, and now it's a three-parter.
Good call, always, to be honest with you.
Yes, but I feel like that does give it, like, this breakneck fucking speed. Like, I feel like that we've never had on Doctor Who before. I don't think we've seen a serial this fast. We've definitely had some stuff that's crammed a bunch of stuff in, but it's always done it very badly.
Right. Well, there's definitely stuff in this episode that's underdeveloped.
Yeah.
But at this point, we're so used to, like, the shorthand of Doctor Who that it's like, I don't need it.
So one of the things that has been added in, like I said, they just start introducing a bunch of stuff right here at the top. So we've had the Shimmerans and the Bannermen. Then we have this toll booth. Now we have the Americans.
I also have a lot of philosophical questions about the toll booth.
Is it a time toll? It's got to be a time toll booth.
A toll booth in the time stream. So the time stream needs to be maintained.
Oh, sure.
Via taxes.
Sure.
Okay. And also, they have chintzy tours throughout the time stream. So it's not like the Time Lords, because that feels an awful lot like interfering.
Yeah, it does.
To just do tours to, like...
There are other races that time travel, though, right? I mean, Daleks do it.
Is this a Dalek toll booth?
I don't think so. No, they say what they are because they're purple things. The Doctor talks about how they're like these purple creatures, and he's like, won't that look weird to have them be on Earth?
Then they show one of them going through the, like, machine that turns him into human, and it's fantastic.
It looks like it might be a little painful. Because he's like, he's like limboing through it almost.
But then when he gets through, everybody cheers.
Yeah, and it's not one of the passengers, it's the pilot, whose name is Murray. They have nostalgia trips on a bus. And it's called, they call it the Transformation Arch, which, that reminds me of the Chameleon Arch.
Yeah.
Wonder if they're related. But, their spaceship looks exactly like a tour bus. Just.
It's amazing.
It's like beat up and like, we made it look old and beat up because of the, like, you know, aesthetics.
Because of the nostalgia. But it's really just. It's an old and beat up spaceship.
I'm like, but it's got a top of the line engine in it. It probably doesn't.
Even the Doctor is like, oh, I've heard of this company. People have died on these tours. Anyway, Mel, you take the bus. I'm going to take the TARDIS.
So that's what happens. They split up. But we also get a brief scene of the Americans. We have Jerome Weissmuller, who calls the White House from a police box.
That really threw you.
Yeah. They just did it because they had them at that point. And they'd be like, oh, that'd be fun. But it's also, like, very confusing for me as a viewer.
I had to explain to Joe that we were in the 50s.
I thought maybe they'd do something else with it, but like, I thought maybe there'd be some TARDIS confusion. But no, it's just they call the White House on the police box.
I love how long we just cut back to the Americans being like, what are they doing? What is their relationship to the rest of the plot?
Well, what they're supposed to be doing is they're supposed to be keeping track of a satellite. They're supposed to be tracking down a satellite. I don't know why they've come all the way out here to do that. Like, all they just have telescopes. It does crash to Earth, so they have to go find it. How it crashes to Earth, we'll find out in just a second.
But, like, they're so tangentially related to everything else. But every once in a while, we'll just get long scenes of them looking for that satellite still.
Or just,
talking,
like,
to a beekeeper.
There's a scene where they're, like, camping at one point. And one of them's like, you go out and get the firewood or whatever. And he's like, oh, I don't want to go out. I'll get you, Weissmuller. They're just, like, this weird comedy duo. Also, one of them is definitely American. That's Weissmuller. You can tell he's American because he's got a New York Yankees baseball cap on. But he's actually American.
Was he American but, like, grew up somewhere else?
I think he's just got, like, he's just an old dude. So he's got, like, and he's also not, I don't know, he's got a very distinct way of speaking. I think he might be, like, from, like, I don't know, New York or Boston or something. It's a very strong accent, but it's, like, a legit.
Right.
The other guy, Hawk.
Not so much.
Not so much. I feel like there's a lot of times when people do an American accent, they just do, like, Colonel Sanders. Like, it's, I'm a Southern gentleman. This is how everybody in America sounds. But everyone does this big voice. Oh boy, we're in it now. That's exactly what Hawk sounds like, right?
Yes.
Hello, this is Joe from the future. Just wanted to make a quick note that this actor actually is American, but, like, I think he's playing it so broadly that I just thought his accent was fake. Maybe it is fake, and that's not his actual accent. He's American, but that's not his actual American accent. I don't know. Anyway, he's from Louisiana. Maybe I'm just stupid. Actually, I am just stupid. So anyway, have this clarification. You're welcome. Now back to the episode.
So yeah, they're in the plot now, I guess. Back at the toll booth, they're about to take off in the bus, and Delta lands the Bannerman ship and then runs onto the bus, and she is being chased by Gavrok still. Then they take off in the space bus. Everybody's singing a song, some rock and roll song from the 50s. There's a ton of 50s songs in this, and to have the rights to do it, they're all covers by, like, the composer. And he put it under the name of the band that we'll meet later on at the place that they land. So the satellite gets launched. The bus immediately crashes into it. And they fall down. And the doctor helps them crash. He does something in the TARDIS to puts a cone around them or something to help lessen the impact. And as you pointed out, there's a bit, like, he's pressing all these buttons, and he takes his umbrella and jabs it into a button that he could have easily have reached himself.
I mean, listen, I appreciate the bit, for sure.
I do have a counter to that, though, when I was making the GIFs.
What?
When he presses it, it sends up a huge bunch of, like, sparks.
Ah.
So maybe he knew that was gonna happen. And he didn't want to burn his hand. But he is newly the seventh doctor. He could just grow a new one. He hasn't been seven for that long. But then they crash right in front of a place called Shangri-La. They're not at Disney World at all. They're in Wales. I really like the shot where it shows the sign for the place, and it's Shangri-La, and it's this big, bright, colorful sign, and everything's idyllic and peaceful. And then just a bus falls in front of it and bounces on its tires. It's a really good shot. And then they meet the owner, Burton, who I think is also stunt casting. I think the American stunt casting, too. I think this one's just full of stunt casting. Just famous people that I don't know who the fuck they are.
So, so good to be immune to it.
So the owner, Burton, comes up and greets them and thinks that they are a group that was supposed to have already shown up but are late.
Man, what happened to them?
I think they show up at the end of the serial. Like, remember there's like that bus that comes up, the Glee Club or whatever, and he's like, oh, I gotta go take care of them. I think that's the group that was supposed to have shown up. But he shows them all to their rooms, and Mel and Delta bunk up together. Mel asks her a lot of invasive questions that Delta doesn't want to answer. She's like, don't you want to talk about it? And she just says, no. And you're like, Which, fair enough.
Yeah, you don't know this person.
Leave her alone.
Why are you getting in her space and asking for her life story?
Meanwhile, the doctor and Murray, the pilot, are taken to Billy, a mechanic, to look at their bus.
This is the first character who just sort of rolls with shit.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, this is like no bus I've ever seen. He's just looking at this spaceship engine. And they're like, yeah, we need this crystal is broken. The doctor's like, I've got one to replace it. But like, he's just like, sure, okay.
There's the pilot and the doctor who are both.
Yes.
From like the future and understand this technology. And they get a mechanic from the 1950s to fix their spaceship while they're just fucking around.
To be fair, Murray takes the crystal and is like, I'll put it in, and then immediately breaks it. So maybe they need the guy from the 1950s?
Apparently.
While they're talking to Billy, a woman shows up on a motorcycle, and her name is Ray. She has a cool leather jacket on with spikes on it. It's really cool. And she clearly has the hots for Billy, and Billy seems sort of like not interested. She's like, anything I can do to help? And Murray's like, you don't have a, I don't know, some sort of wrench.
And she does.
And she does. She pulls it right out. He's like, oh, cool. And then takes it and then breaks that crystal immediately. And then he's like, the doctor's like, I can grow a new crystal, but it's going to take 24 hours to do it. And then she's like, cool, then you guys can stay for the dance. And they're like, yeah. She says, see you later, alligator, which will come back later. Ray, this character, was written with the potential to be the next companion.
That makes so much sense.
Because they weren't sure, but then it changed because they weren't sure when Mel was going to leave. Because, spoilers, Mel's going to leave, I guess. Then they all go to dinner. They bang a gong and to indicate that it's time for dinner, which Delta hears and doesn't know what it is and pulls out a gun on Mel. So she's very tense and nervous. And Mel's like, it's just the dinner gong, and leaves. And then that's when Delta opens her bag to reveal an egg. Meanwhile, Gavrok has a scene with the toll master, the guy in the big purple outfit, and asks where that bus went. Finally, he just tells them, like, they were supposed to go to Disneyland, but something happened, and I don't know where they actually landed. And then Gavrok's like, well, thanks. And then shoots him in the back. And he dies a very dramatic death.
Oh, the stunt casting.
Yeah, apparently Sylvester McCoy was like, I wish I had been like, it's like I wish I could have, I wish I would have told him to do that scene less.
Really?
Like he did it too big. Yeah. He's like, I wasn't comfortable just going around talking to people like that at that point because I was new. But he's like, I could have given him some pointers. At dinner, Mel tells the doctor about Delta and how she's like, she won't answer any of my questions. And she's very jumpy and she has a gun. Also, a small child gives the doctor an apple. And there's just a whole lot of comedic bits with the apple, but he never actually eats the apple.
I know, because this is one of my most stressing, one of the tropes that stress me out the most is when somebody has food in a scene but is not allowed to eat it. It drives me crazy. The doctor has this apple forever and is not allowed to eat this apple, which is a good bit, but it stresses me out. Let people eat the food in their scenes.
There's also a setup for something here that if you're not paying attention, you'll completely miss it because they have no dialogue. Billy sits at the table that Delta is at, and they look at each other with looks.
They do? That happens?
That happens.
Okay.
That establishes that they got the hots for each other. They have no dialogue.
They're 100% in love now, just so you know.
Yeah. So we cut to the dance. And Billy shows the doctor his amped up amp. He's got a special amp. Because Billy is the singer. Like, he's the head of the band.
I did not realize, by the way, for the longest time that he was the same character. That he was also the mechanic.
Because he wasn't dressed like a mechanic?
Because, yeah! He was wearing completely different clothes!
At the scene where Ray comes up, she says Billy is going to be performing that night.
Yeah, it isn't until she reacts, like, sad by not getting his attention that I realized it was the same character.
Aw, yeah, because, like, he's like, this next song goes out to someone very special, and it's, like, full fallen love song or something like that, and he looks at Delta, and
who he just met.
And had no dialogue with. He looks right at Delta and not at Ray, and Ray is very sad. And then the doctor's like, hey, basically he sees that and is trying to be comforting to Ray. And he's like, I think he's like, hey, do you want to get out of here sort of thing? And then she's like, yes. And like before he finishes saying what he's doing and then just starts dancing with him, pulls him into like a twirl and everything. And he's like, whoa.
I will say there's this thing about this scene between Seven and Ray that like shows the doctor to be a lot more sweet than he has been. Like, even Five, who is kind of, like, nicer... Well, I guess I wouldn't say nicer. Softer. He's also, like, frequently very rude or, like, doesn't pick up on emotions or stuff. This seems like something that's very specific to Seven to me. He picks up on, like, the subtler emotions. That is not a characteristic of the doctor always.
Do you like that? Do you dislike that?
Yeah, I found that whole scene very endearing.
Yeah, I like it too.
I like the doctor being able to pick up on those emotions, but not necessarily knowing what to do.
Because that continues to happen with him and Ray and her reaction to the whole Billy thing. Because, like, after the dance, he finds her just crying in a barn and he's like, they're there. And, like, has to hug her and stuff, and she's just weeping, and you can tell he's like, I have no idea what to do. I was here to investigate a mystery, and I don't know what's happening now. Because he was trying to follow Delta to see what's up with Delta, because he suspects something's going on with her. But they overhear, there's a guy that comes in. I don't think they ever say his name. It's only in the credits. His name's Keeler. He has some sweet sideburns. He gave Delta a look when they were on the bus together, like, he recognized her. On this phone, he calls Gavrok and says, I found the Shimmering Queen. Give me a reward.
What was he on the bus for? He just happened to be going on this nostalgia tour and happened to be like, oh shit, there's a bounty on her.
Maybe. It happens. Bounty hunters gotta take vacations too.
Fair enough.
And they're hiding out from him, and then the doctor sneezes, so Keeler is alerted to their presence. And Gavrok does agree to give him the money, whatever it is.
But then they blow him up.
Well, before that happens, we have one more scene, which is back at Delta and Mel's bedroom. Because I was like, Delta's like now wearing this like green polka dotted dress. And I was like, where the fuck did she get that? all she had was a case with an egg in it. And then she's like,
oh God, it's the egg.
And then she thanks Mel for the dress. And I was like, thank you for solving that problem.
Thank you for solving that mystery.
Then Mel screams, like they show the egg, and Mel screams at the sight of, this is badly edited, because like they show something that Mel could scream at, but she screams at it before it hatches. It just shows the egg and she goes, ah, and then the egg hatches, and then I scream because it was terrifying.
The most terrifying fucking thing that has maybe ever been done in the show so far or since?
No. There's still the screaming Fury, guys from Fury of the Deep. Fucking...
There was also that gargoyle that vomited goo. This is up there with both of those. Yeah. I hate this.
It's like squishing out of the egg. I think it's fine when it's a full baby, but when it's just smushing up out
it's
of that
smushing
egg.
Smushing up and out it's of slimy. And it's just a head. And it's a slimy, it looks like an adult head. And it's just a green, slimy human head being birthed out of this egg. And it's not good. It's not good. It's not good.
Can I offer you an egg in these trying times?
You may not. I remembered that as the cliffhanger.
That wasn't the cliffhanger. The cliffhanger is the Doctor and Ray in trouble. Keeler pulls a gun on him and is like, oh, I can not only get a ransom for Delta, but also...
The Bannerman. No.
No, the Doctor, because he's like, you're a Time Lord and wanted and stuff. You're a fugitive. Who knew I was going to get two bounties?
I was just on vacation.
Yeah, and the Doctor's like, if you're only in it for the money, let Ray go. She has nothing to do with any of this. And then he's like, I don't just kill for money. It's also something I enjoy.
That is a fucking amazing line.
It's really good.
Because it's so fucked up.
That's the cliffhanger.
You're just like, oh, damn. Normally, I think if there had been that reveal and then it like kept going and then there was a cliffhanger, I think normally we'd be sitting here being like, well, that was padded. That was awkward. That's such a fucking killer line that it's like, damn, that's a good cliffhanger. Because you're just like, this shit's fucked. This guy's for real.
Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of... There's a weird tone to this one where there's a lot of fucked up shit like that happening, but it's also the goofiest fucking shit at the same time, and it's a weird balance. Because you got, like, the bad guys are, like, truly evil and horrible, but then you got, like, 1950s rock and roll music and weird characters not reacting to things, and it's very goofy and silly, but, like, those two things are happening at the same time. There's a scene in the episode we're about to talk about that's, like, truly upsetting. And then, like, kind of forgotten about. But we'll get there. So that's the end of episode one. We're now into episode two, which I've called The Call of the Bees.
The fucking... I'm so obsessed with the beekeeper. I'm obsessed with him.
Gavrok is watching, I guess, Keeler talk to the Doctor. And is like, I'll give him what he's wanting quicker than he expects. And then he, like, because they've had this, like, radio connection, he sends... I don't know.
You know how sometimes you just send an explosion over the radio? That's what he does.
He just explodes Keeler and it knocks the Doctor and Ray unconscious. Then the first truly what the fuck is happening scene happens. Billy, with a bouquet of flowers, with his hair slicked back, he's looking pretty cool, goes up to Delta's room, walks right in, does not knock, by the way, a little presumptuous. And sees Delta holding a big-ass puppet baby.
We gotta talk about this puppet. Because, one, it's disgusting. Two, it looks amazing.
It does. It looks amazing.
It is such a good puppet. It's so good. And it's absolutely disgusting. I mean, it's amazing to see somebody, like, hold this green, slimy baby and be like, oh. It's great. This is the only scene that it's in. And what's truly mind-blowing is that we cut away from this scene. I mean, more stuff happens and we'll talk about it. But we cut away from it to do other stuff. And then when we cut back, she's no longer holding the puppet. She's holding
a baby.
A baby with green face paint in like an alien
hoodie.
A shitty alien hoodie. Why did we switch?
Like, there's a point later where it would be like, okay, now I know why you switched.
Because it's growing up. But for as long as it was a baby, use the puppet. It was a good puppet. Someone put a lot of time and effort into it.
It's only in this, like, two shots, maybe?
And you got from that to the cheesiest fucking thing I've seen in Doctor Who in a long time.
It looks like
time.
A bad Halloween costume.
Although, let me say, if you have a baby and you don't cosplay as the baby and the
Delta,
what are you doing? Get on that.
I bet there are people that have cosplayed as like Delta, Billy, and the child.
You have to.
This child does not have a name at any point, by the way. It's Delta, Billy, and just this girl.
Okay, now that I've gotten that out of my system, I want to talk to you about the other wild thing about this scene.
Yeah, which is the fact that this is the first time that Billy and Delta have a conversation, and she says, right off the bat, I think I owe you an explanation.
Yes! That's how their first dialogue starts. I owe you an explanation. I trust you, and I'm gonna trust you with this secret. This is their first dialogue! Make sure to look before!
He did sing a song at her.
We are not gonna stop. This pace is not gonna slow down from this point.
And the thing is, he has no reaction to, like, what the fuck is that baby?
He's not like, dude, I think your baby's sick.
He just comes and sits down and is like, what would you like to talk about? I don't think he has any dialogue, actually. He just comes in and sits down. No facial, like, huh? Nothing. He's so chill about this, which is consistent. That's the way he was when he was like, well, this is a weird fucking engine. Okay. So Billy's just cool with things. But it's not just Billy, though, because everybody who meets this weird ass child, nobody, not a single person's like, what's up with this weird looking kid?
Like, oh shit, that's an alien. We don't have those in the 1950s.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on in the 50s in Wales.
To be fair, just everyone there has met the Doctor at some point or has heard about the Doctor at some point. And it's like, yeah, shit like that happens. It's Wales.
Why is Mueller and Hawk are looking around for this crash satellite and they bump into this old guy, possibly more stunt casting. I don't know. He gives me very Tom Baker vibes. His name is Gronwy and he is a beekeeper, and ask him whether he's seen anything weird in the sky. And he's like, I've seen many weird things in the sky. Everything he says is like fucking cryptic as hell.
Well, he's like, do you want to talk to the bees? Because the bees know things.
I'll ask my bees if they've seen anything weird lately. And then, like, a butterfly lands on his hand. It was at the... Because we watched this, and I was rewatching it, making notes and reading the transcript and making GIFs. And it's at this point that I realized all this shit about the bees and the butterfly, which he talks about, like, cocoons and changing and all that stuff and growing and all that nonsense. All of that is, like, some weird metaphor about the Shimmerin.
Yes.
I didn't realize it the entire time we watched it initially.
Oh, wow. Because that's the only thing that ties us to the rest of the episode at all.
It's weird. What? Why? Why do we need... Like, it's like some weird form of exposition through a parallel bee story? It's a bee plot. Oh my god, it's the bee story!
Are you okay? Are you... You look like your brain just melted.
It's the bee story! The bee plot, Tony! The bee plot! Amazing. I don't know if that was done on purpose, but if so, kudos. Probably not, though. Anyway, that's all that happens in that scene.
That scene happens, and then we go back to things that somewhat... Now we cut back, and it's a real baby in a costume.
Yeah, I think that scene's just there so we don't have to hear Delta explain everything. So, like, we don't want to have her explain everything that's already happened. What if we just have this weird scene with a beekeeper? So, yeah, and now it's a real baby in a costume. They're like, let's go somewhere else to talk, because Mel's sleeping.
Mel sleeps through a significant portion of the serial. And then later, like, the Doctor comes to, like, come get her, and she's like, huh? What? A plot? Okay. Yeah, I'll participate.
The thing is, like, Mel was, like, there at the beginning of her story. And, like, was just sitting there not saying anything. And then it cuts back when it's, like, a baby. And Mel's just, like, asleep.
She's like, I can't. You know what? This is boring.
I'm so tired. I just got back from a dance. I guess they must have stayed up all night talking. Because it's daytime now. It was night. It was after the dance.
Oh, you think that's what happened? That, like, she had someone over, and Mel was like, he'll leave eventually, and then I can go to sleep.
And then he didn't.
because they're in love.
I guess.
So Mel, like, passed out at around, like, 5 a.m.
They leave Mel so she can sleep, and they ride off on the Vincent, which is Billy's motorcycle. And they're going to go off to a sweet spot, as he calls it. The doctor wakes up and sees Delta and Billy leave off on the motorcycle, and he wakes up Ray and is like, they run to Mel and are like, where did they go? Because we got to find them because the Bannermen are coming. And he's like, we got to evacuate the camp because the Bannermen are bad. Bannermen are real bad. And like, I think there's a real sad scene where Ray's like, where could they have gone? And she's like, I know some places I used to go with Billy. Yeah, and so they go to tell to Burton, the owner, to tell him, like, you got to evacuate the camp. And then he does that thing where he's like, so what you're telling me is, and then he, like, recaps how ridiculous this fucking cereal is. And then he just laughs at them. And he's like, yeah, sure. And then we'll have space tea and toast. But then he's like, what can I do to make you believe? And he's like, I'll show you my spaceship.
I think that they show them the nostalgia spaceship first.
There was supposed to be a scene of him in the TARDIS, but because all of this was location filming, they didn't want to have to take the actors to the studio. Set. So they cut that scene entirely. So you just see him come out and go, holy shit, it's bigger on the inside. And he's like, can we take a ride around in it? And the doctor's like, sure, later. He never gets that ride.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer.
But that convinces him to get his staff to evacuate. There's a scene where, like, he's telling his staff, we all need to evacuate. And they're like, we won't do it. We're going to stick here and do whatever.
Absolutely wild.
Yeah. And then he's like, shut the fuck up. I'm the boss. Leave. He's like, you're all great for being brave and whatnot, but please go. And then they go. The whole camp's evacuated. Murray has to wait a half hour for the crystal to finish growing before he can leave, before they can put it in the bus.
The one that he broke. The doctor was growing a new one. I don't know if we ever said that.
Yeah. And there was like a bit where the doctor's like, we can take everybody in my TARDIS. And he's like, a captain never leaves his ship. And that's a good enough reason to
wait there.
Yeah. Billy and Delta are at a lake having a picnic. Every time we cut back, the girl is, the baby is like bigger. She's like a small girl now. And she has this, she sings. It's like, and it's like a song, but also a defense mechanism. The doctor and Ray go searching for Delta and Billy on her bike. This is the first time we've ever seen the doctor on a motorcycle. He drives a motorcycle later. How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about it?
Yeah, we've never seen the doctor operate a motorcycle before.
I don't know. Why do we have to have a feeling about it?
Because we had a feeling about it when the first doctor was in a car. Wait, we have seen the doctor on a motorcycle before. Three's been on a motorcycle.
Yeah, Three's been in every vehicle possible.
That's true. I just always feel weird when the doctor's in a vehicle. Not Three. It, like, fit perfectly fine for Three. But every other doctor, it feels a little weird to me.
Why?
I don't know. Just does. It definitely felt weird when the first doctor did it, because, like, they were never, ever on Earth. I mean, they were never on Earth in present day, because if they were on Earth, then, like, Ian and Barbara would leave, and then that did happen. Anyway, there's a brief scene where the doctor and Ray ask the Americans if they've seen Delta and Billy, and they're like, no, and they're like, shoot, and then they leave. And it's like, that plot intersected for a second, and nothing happens. But they eventually do find them and tell them that the Bannermen are coming. The Bannermen do land near the Americans and shoot at them. They blow up their radio and their tent. And they're like, that's the property of Uncle Sam. And Gavrok's like, where is this Uncle Sam? I love shit like that. But they get put in, like, these weird neck bracelets.
Here's the thing that I love about
this. That might happen
this.
In the next episode, but yeah.
Because, yeah, the Bannermen are, like, watching over them, and then they get called to do something else, and they're like, okay, hang on, I'm putting these, like, neck shackles on you. But they're not tied to anything.
I mean, it'd be hard to go anywhere in them, but yeah, they could.
But you think that you would...
leave?
Do something.
Left, right. Left, right. Left, right.
I'm saying, you think that they would do something to make sure that they couldn't leave?
Yeah.
There's nothing about these neck things that makes it so that they can't just go away.
Good point. I didn't think about that. Honestly, it doesn't matter anyway, because, like, in that scene where they get it put on, it's immediately taken off. It's actually in the next episode. I jumped ahead a little bit, but yeah. I was just like, that's the next thing that happens with them, right? And then I looked at my own notes, and I was like, nope, there's a lot of shit. So, the crystal is installed in the bus. Mel's gonna stay behind and go on the TARDIS, because she's like, I gotta be with the doctor. And Murray says, see you later, alligator. Mel says, in a while, crocodile. And they wave, and they're about to take off, and as they're about to take off, Gavrok shows up, and the Bannermen blow up the bus.
The whole bus. The whole bus. All those people are dead.
All of them.
All of those people are dead.
It's very upsetting.
Yes.
It's like fucked up for that scene. And then after that, nobody cares.
We just go back to this like madcap, goofy thing that we were doing before. But like a whole cast of people that we knew just were violently murdered.
Yep. Murray, aliens pretending to be from the 50s, all dead. All of them. Like, that's truly fucked up. Like, when that happened, I was like, what the fuck? That's a dark turn.
It took me a minute to even register it because I was like, whoa, that can't be what just happened. There's no way they just killed a busload of people.
They did. So Gavrot grabs Mel because she's like laying on the ground next to the exploded bus. And like, I like this scene because he's like, was Delta on that bus? And she's like, yes. You killed everyone, which she's lying. Delta was not on the bus. I like that she lies. I think that's a good little bit. But as soon as she says that, they all drive up on their motorcycles. Delta and Billy and the child and the doctor and Ray. And then they start shooting at them and then they drive off. Then Gavrock's going to take Mel as a hostage. Mel and Burton. Burton's still alive too, the owner of the camp. So they're trying to figure out where to go, and Delta's like, you gotta stop, I'm hearing something. And she has these like antenna things behind her ears that pick up sounds. And she's like, I hear the call of the bees. There are bees calling. They're saying to come here. So they go to Garanwy's, who sees this weird collection of people, including a green-faced little girl, and it's just like, oh, I bet she'd want some honey, and gives her some honey. And then they're like, can we come in? He's like, oh yeah, sure, come on in. The doctor's like, can I have a broom handle and a pillowcase? And he's like, I don't see why not. Just takes everything so casually. The doctor asks Billy if he can borrow his bike.
I love this scene.
He drives back to the camp with the broom handle and the pillowcase, and it's a white flag. Gavrock shoots at him, and the doctor gets very mad. He's like, don't, white flag. It's simple everywhere. You can't shoot at me. It's a white flag. But also this whole scene, Gavrock is just eating a whole leg of lamb, and it's disgusting. When he talks, it like comes out. You can see it in his mouth. It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. There's also some criticism about him playing it too straight and too serious. But
oh,
I like,
no.
Yeah, I like that. It's like a good counter to the goofiness. Like, he's like a legitimately terrifying villain amidst all of this goofiness.
I think what else is great about this scene, it's mild. Like, he pulls up under the white flag, and he's shot at under the white flag. And he goes through this whole speech, and then he's like, here's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna take the hostages that you have, and I'm gonna leave.
Which is Mel and Burton. I mean, he does.
That's what I'm saying. That's what's wild. He does. I mean, what's really funny is he gives this big speech and he's like, and being like blustery and using that to like get out of a situation. That is kind of his MO. But also the fact that like Gavrock is like so unimpressed by it. Like, he was shooting at him. He has no reason to stop shooting at him. And there is this moment that is my favorite in this whole serial where the doctor turns around and goes, on second thought, maybe I went a bit too far. Which is it's a great scene.
It is weird though, like, because like he does, he's like, basically first off says, free these prisoners and I'll testify to your mercy. And he's like, eh. But the Bannermen do let him go. They untie them. And the doctor leaves with them, like starts walking off. But then you hear, as like all the Bannermen load their guns.
And it's like, why'd they let him go?
That's the end of episode two, is that actually, I think I may have gone a little too far. I see in episode two, and then we're down to episode three, which I've called The Singing Time.
It's an amazing line reading. I love it.
It's very good. And then he just gets on the motorcycle. Burton gets on behind him. Mel gets in the sidecar. There's a sidecar, by the way. We never said that. And they just drive off. They let him drive off. I know why now. I'm thinking about it, which is just they're hoping that they'll lead him to Delta. But why?
Like, they could have had a scene where they said that.
Like they could have, like, shot at them or something. But, like, it seems very suspect that they just let them go. Surely the doctor would be like, this is weird.
I know I'm amazing, but that was still too easy.
As they're leaving, Gavrock fires a flare into the air, which is to clue in the Bannermen to basically camp out and shoot a tracker onto the doctor's motorcycle, because it will lead them to Delta, is what they're thinking. They put the Americans in neck cuffs and then leave. And then Ray just shows up immediately and unlocks them, because she has an Allen key. And yes, the Bannermen shoot the Vincent with the tracker. Vincent is the motorcycle, if you've forgotten about that. And then we cut to just Gronwy and Billy doing some beekeeping. They're wearing the big hoods. Billy's spraying some shit on the hive. And Gronwy's just telling him about royal jelly. Which is, that is again another metaphorical thing. Eating the royal jelly can make a queen? Is that what happens? It like turns them into a queen?
Yes.
And also Delta has been feeding a syringe of food, this like liquid, to the baby.
The baby who's like, is she a teen yet?
I don't think she's quite a teen, but she's probably she can walk now and stuff. She hasn't done her final grow up yet. She's probably like in her like 7 to 10, somewhere in there. And she's feeding
her. She doesn't speak.
No, she just goes. She's got that musical tone. Delta says that the seeing time is near, and then I guess that's like the final mutation, I guess. And that this food that she's feeding helps with that. It helps prepare her for the seeing time and for whatever. And then something truly fucked up happens that is honestly not cool at all. Billy steals a packet of the syringes with the food in it. It's like green liquid in a syringe that she feeds to the baby. He just straight up steals a packet, and I'm like, that doesn't seem good. And then when he reveals what he's doing, they're like, okay with it. And I'm like, that's not good.
You stole food from a baby. That's literally like the example we use of being evil.
What if she needed all of that? What if the baby needed all of that? And he just started drinking her food. Because spoilers, that's what he does. He starts drinking the food. Because again, it's like the royal jelly. And now he's going to be a Shimmerin. Then we get a scene of Gavrok booby-trapping the TARDIS. He puts a thing on top and it puts a cone around it and anybody that comes within it will explode. Then there's a scene of the Doctor driving through a field and Mel waves at cows and it's very adorable. She's very excitedly waving at cows.
You gotta wave at cows.
They stop near a couple of goats and the Doctor's like, can I take a ribbon from your hair, Mel? I have a plan. And she's like, sure, why not? But then they get back to Garanwy's. Everybody's at Garanwy's now. The Bannermen that left the Americans, the two of them, they come across Garanwy's as well, and they see Delta and the child. And the child grows to her final form, which is like a teenager. And she screams and grows. And as she's screaming, it blows out all the windows in Garanwy's place. And like the Bannermen's like holding their heads because it's like hurting their eardrums. And then Delta shoots one of them, and the other one gets away. And then the Doctor has this whole plan he's gonna do. They're like, we're gonna leave. He gets everybody, and he turns a radio on, and he gets Delta's scarf, and he puts it under a door, and he's like, my trap is set. It's the dumbest fucking plan. I have no idea how it worked, but it works. But we'll get to what it is. They drive off. Gavrok's tracking down the tracker, and he finds it tied to a goat with Mel's ribbon. But then they get to Garanwy's anyway, and they think, because they hear the radio. Also, I think the Bannerman ran up, who got away and was like, I know where they are. And they all go there. They shoot the radio. They shoot up the place. They find Delta's scarf, and they burst into the room, and they knock over all of Garanwy's jars of honey on top of them.
Do you know what really upsets me about this, too? Is like the scene before where the Doctor asks him if he has honey, and he so lovingly describes the various types of honey that he has, and like how old they are, and what flavor they are. And the Doctor's like, great. I can't wait to smash those later.
That's what happens. And then they stumble outside covered in honey and get stung by bees a billion times.
That's the plan.
Pulled it off without a hitch. They all get back to Shangri-La. They're about to go into the TARDIS when the Doctor notices the booby trap. And Hawk's like, I don't believe none of this nonsense, boy! And he reaches out for the door and burns his hand. And this is also at the point where Delta catches Billy eating all the food. And he's like, well, you need a male Shimmerin to continue your race or whatever. We got a bone at some point, and I'm not your species. And, like, they almost kiss and then are caught by Burton. I'm like, we got to set up for the final confrontation. There's a cool scene where the Doctor is tracing the edge of the effect of the booby trap. He's just got a stick, and he's, like, dragging it along the edge, and it occasionally sparks. And he's like, I figure I can dig up underneath the cone and get up in there to deactivate it. That doesn't happen, but it sounds super cool. He's like, that's plan A. And then the Bannermen show up and she's like, is there a plan B? And he's like, oh yes, run. The doctor and Billy set up his amped up speaker, which was set up. There's a lot of payoffs in this final episode.
For as crazy as like wild literally and everything out there is. And like fast paced as this one is, it's wild how much is actually payoffs to setups.
So they set up the speaker on the roof and they start getting shot at. The child screams into it and it amplifies her scream and it basically incapacitates all of the Bannermen. Gavrok stumbles backwards into the cone, the booby trap around the TARDIS, and explodes. And they kill Gavrok. And then Weissmuller ties up the Bannermen. The doctor gives him some jump ropes and says, tie him up. And he's like just bragging about how he used to be like an Eagle Scout and he knows all of these knots. And there's a scene where he says, you're the lousiest bunch of Bannermen I ever saw. What Bannermen has this guy saw? Weird line.
Scene.
Huh?
What?
Weird scene? Is that what you said?
No.
What?
What?
Huh? What did you say? I'm confused.
What?
Oh, are you saying it should be scene, not saw?
Yes.
Oh. Maybe it is. I don't know.
I mean, when you said it.
I don't know what the actual line is.
I mean, the line is saw.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh. I feel like we're in a weird who's on first routine. And I'm the dumb guy. They're like, where's Billy? And then Delta says, Billy is just changing. And then we cut to, we never said this, but like at the beginning, before she gets her green polka dot dress, she's wearing like this white sparkly jumpsuit. And now Billy is in a white sparkly jumpsuit.
Is it hers?
No, because she has hers. I think it might even just be her skin. Oh, shit, maybe it's just their skin, because the kid has one, too.
Wait, does that mean they're naked at the end?
Yeah, I think they're just naked. I think they're just buck-ass naked.
Well, that doesn't make any sense, because it's not like she's wearing it under the dress.
Maybe she is. I don't know. I don't know where these costumes came from. The kid has them, and, like, they grow with her. Have you thought about it? It grows with her.
So that's just their skin? And they're all naked in the end.
Yeah. And he's just a full-on Shimmeron now. He's got like a slight green tint to his skin and stuff.
But he looks like her. He doesn't look like the Green Army guy. No. I don't think the Army guys even have a face.
No, they got like bumpy skin. He's getting stuff packed to leave with the Shimmeron, and the doctor has his guitar. It looks cool. The doctor has this cool rock and roll red guitar, which apparently is anachronistic. It wasn't made at the time period that this is set, but whatever. Anyway, he says he's unsure about all of this changing into a different species thing, but love has never been known for its rationality because none of this love bullshit makes any sense. They've had 5 lines of dialogue, most of it exposition. Anyway, everybody says their goodbyes. Ray is kind of sad, but Billy's like gives her the Vincent, his motorcycle, and that seems to be a good compensation. She rides off on it. Then there's a song playing as they get into the ship, which says love is the answer. Really hitting that point home.
Well, they have to do it through something.
And then he's like, let's make this baby fly. And then like that shot lasts for too long. He says that, let's make this baby fly. And then there's just like an awkward 5 seconds of her pressing buttons. And then the ship takes off. And they're going to start a new family. Billy, Delta, and unnamed child. The cone that was on top of the TARDIS, the booby trap, has been deactivated because Gavrok blowing up zapped it of all its energy. Garanwy gives the doctor a special jar of honey and describes how great it is. So he's not too upset, or maybe he just doesn't know yet that all of his honey has been fucked up.
Well, he has to know because one of them made it and he gave that one to the doctor.
But he gives the doctor honey before he goes. The Americans are like, well, what are we going to do? And the doctor points to the satellite that they had pulled out of the bus, right? And I guess when the bus exploded, the satellite just... because they put the satellite in the trunk of the bus. And I guess when the bus exploded, it just threw it into a nearby fence.
I guess.
Nobody gives a shit about those dead people.
Also, it's just wild that these two characters have been in the whole show. They've been in the whole thing, and then they finally just show up at the end and be like, oh, we found it. That's what they're in this episode to do. That's it. They're done.
They tied up the Bannerman with his special knots. So then the doctor and Mel TARDIS out, and then the Americans look at each other like, what? What's going on? And then Garanwy walks in front of the Shangri-La sign in a very, like, tilted up angle, looks at the TARDIS, smiles and winks, and then we're done. End of serial.
Why does it end on him?
I don't know.
What is he?
Somebody once theorized that he's a future doctor. I'm for it.
I think it's a lot more sinister than that.
I mean, I don't think it is. I don't think anything's been done with Garanwy since.
But, like, clearly something's up with him. Why end the entire serial on a shot of this fucking, not even secondary, this fucking tertiary character winking at the camera?
It's so hot that you said tertiary.
What?
Sorry, go on. What were you saying?
No, no, you just threw me so bad.
Oh, yeah, use them big words.
What is he?
I think he is a doctor, because he knows a lot about the plot. He does all of that B shit. I think he specifically does it to make Billy take the food. That's what I think. He's very calm and casual about everything. But then again, so is fucking everybody. No one goes, weird alien baby! Not one person goes, weird alien baby! Honestly, Mel doesn't either. She's just like, an egg! Ah! When the baby pops out, she's fine.
And frankly, that is the terrifying fucking part.
But yeah, he could be a doctor.
He's something, and I don't think it's good.
He didn't do anything malicious or evil. A butterfly landed on him at one point.
And you trust that?
Yeah.
I don't trust that. Mm-mm.
All right.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Well, that's how it ends. It ends with Garanwy smiling and winking, and we're done. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for final thoughts.
How did watchdog groups with no experience in television take a controlling interest on Saturday morning television?
When did Wonder Woman make her animated debut?
Want to know why there were two competing Ghostbuster shows?
How Atari changed the Saturday morning landscape?
How did networks compete over similar genres at the same time?
Find out all of this and more on the Best Saturdays of Our Lives podcast.
A proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back for a special spooky Halloween ending.
Stop saying that. It doesn't mean anything. This is airing in November.
Skeletoni, do you know what time it is?
It's 9:13 p.m. and it's time
the
for...
The witching hour!
9:13 p.m. The witching hour when you're older than 30. It's time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
Final as in death.
I don't know, man. It's just like a whole episode of Doctor Who, isn't it? What else do you want me to say about it? It's like an entire episode of Doctor Who. Those are my final thoughts.
Well, did you like it? Did you not like it? What?
It's just like a whole episode of the television show Doctor Who.
Technically, it's three episodes.
It's a whole fucking serial of the television show Doctor Who.
Yeah, but like details, man. Did you like it? Did you dislike it?
Yeah, absolutely.
What did you like? What did you dislike?
It's just like a whole serial.
We've been doing this for 6 years. You don't know how it fucking works?
It's like a whole serial. Stuff happens in it continually. Like one right after the other. Like it's like a whole series of events.
I have a week to edit this. Come on.
That aren't connected. There are characters in it, some of which we already knew, some of which were new. And they all did things together. And those are my final thoughts.
I'm so angry.
Okay, your turn.
I liked this one. It's weird.
It's a whole serial of the television show Doctor Who.
You've done your final thoughts. It's my turn. I'll show you how it's done. I really like this one. It's weird. I don't know if it all hangs together quite well. The whole time I'm just like in awe of everything it's choosing to do. It's so bizarre and like done with purpose. I don't know.
It's never not making an interesting choice.
Yes.
I will give it that.
I do think maybe it could have lived in some of the darker moments for a tad longer. The whole bus fucking dies. This whole bus of like fun, goofy characters dies. And nobody gives a shit. That bothers me a little. But I do enjoy the goofiness mixed with like the fuck upness of like Gavrot. I was saying while we watched it, this serial feels the most like modern Who that we've ever watched. I think partially because it's so short and like the pace is like, the pace fucking goes. And also the Doctor's on a motorcycle, which just makes me think of like 11.
I think I like 7 a lot.
I like 7 a lot too. He's very confident and sure of himself by this point, I feel like. Feels like he's settled in a little better. I didn't mention it, but like this serial, he does some of those, and I think this is the last time he does it. Of like fucking up sayings. He does some play on all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. He says something like all haste and no speed makes Jill a dull person or something like that. So
all work and no play keeps the Doctor away.
So he does a few of those, but I think this is the last time he does it. But yeah, it's fun. It's fun and weird. And again, I enjoyed the pace of it. It's relentless, but it's not relentless in the ways of like fucking Time Flight where you're just like, please stop. I'm begging you. I can't. You're throwing too much at me and none of it makes any goddamn sense.
This is fun.
This is fun. And it doesn't not make sense. And I think it's like incredibly well structured. Like everything that is set up pays off. And that rarely happens. I feel like this is the first time I've ever really noticed, like, oh man, they set up everything and they're paying off everything. It's great.
It's not a story that's particularly concerned, I feel like, with the interiority of its characters.
No.
Their characters are more just like more pieces of their structure. And so long as you go in with that mindset, you'll have fun. If you're expecting there to be like character stuff.
No.
Don't.
There's two types of characters. There's three types of characters. There's comedy characters. There's Gavrok, who's evil. And then there's characters who just take things as they come, who are just there for the plot to move forward. The only character I'd say actually maybe has like emotional beats is Rey.
That's true. We didn't talk about her a lot, but they do establish the hell out of her. Like when you told me that she was being set up to maybe be a companion, I was like, that makes sense. The amount of time she spent with the Doctor and the amount of like moments that her and the Doctor had together, that totally makes sense.
You know what other thing I just thought about that we didn't even talk about at all, and it's kind of like an iconic shot, because I've actually seen this shot before I even knew what it was from.
Oh.
I mean, I knew it was from Doctor Who, but I didn't know it was from this episode. After they blow up the bus, and I don't know, they're like celebrating it, the Bannermen all cheer and yell, and they just stick their tongues out. They're all like, ah! I've seen that shot before.
I've never seen it.
I think that was an actor's idea. I don't think that was in the script that they all do the ah face. The Bannermen are not characters, by the way.
No.
Gavrok is the only one, I think, who even really has lines.
You know, in Power Rangers, where the bad guys are just called putties. That's what these guys are. They're just putties.
Like, even Gavrok doesn't even look like them. I guess because he's the leader and he's got to look different. The rest of them are all just like, they all just look exactly the same.
I also forgot that they had those glasses.
Yeah, they got like red visors on. They all just all stick their tongues out. Except that guy on the far right. His tongue's barely out. Get it together, Bannerman.
Also, they all look like they just ate red Jolly Ranchers.
It's a very weird, disturbing shot. But yeah, I guess that's, do we have anything we need to plug?
No.
Cool. I'd just like to say happy Halloween to all you listening out there.
It's November!
Woo! If you liked this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com. You can also find our podcast, our Patreon, our Amazon wish list, and more at linktree.com/watchathon. That's linktr.ee/watchathon. And I want to say special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at mattgolden.xyz. I also want to give a special shout out to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our kick-ass theme tune.
Thanks, Vince!
Check out more of their music at soundcloud.com/VincentEL or vincentel.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about the season finale, Dragonfire. I bet it's about it's a fantasy with dragons and shit. I know one thing about this serial, and it's got the stupidest cliffhanger of all time, which is hard to do when you've had, oh no, the floor. But until next time, keep spooky and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way. Ooh. It's November!
I don't just kill for money. It's also something I enjoy.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.